Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Well, I'm Andrew Rawson from Action on Access, and for the last three, well, almost the last 3 years, with the Higher Education Academy, we've been delivering a project called What Works? Student Retention and Success. So although it, perhaps the workshop's headline is Student Retention, so it's very much about student retention and success, which in many ways, obviously, you know, you can't sort of split apart. The conference as a whole today is about enhancing the student experience. There's been lots of discussion about student engagement, and really that's kind of what I'd like to pick up. And in a sense, there's not been an awful lot of discussion about what is the student experience for, or what is student engagement for. Clearly, in the context of what I'll talk about, it's about retaining students, it's about completion, and it's about student success generally. The programme itself is actually funded by the Higher Education Funding Council for England initially, but is run by the Paul Hamlin Foundation, an educational charity. And they asked Action on Access and the Higher Education Academy to coordinate the project and to disseminate findings. So in a sense, this seminar is one part of that dissemination. The programme began in 2009. And finishes at the end of this academic year, so I'm able now to feedback some of the interim findings that we've got and feedback, and I'd be very interested to get any feedback from yourself on anything that I'm able to say. And then perhaps in terms of the seminar, if people want to make comment on student retention as the Paul Hamlin Foundation programme looks, or in terms of their own institutions, then we can have a kind of discussion. We're due to finish at 5:15, obviously if people have to go for trains. I should understand it's not my presentation that's driving people away, but I hope you'll be able to stay till 5:15, or perhaps if there's not a lot to discuss, we can finish a little earlier. But this will be the kind of end session for the conference. I'd like to start with a couple of quotes. I mentioned that our project started in 2009, and I go back to the public accounts report in February 2008, Staying the Course, Retention of Students in HE. And in his introduction, the chair, Edward Lee, said, "It's 5 years since our last report on student retention, but the percentage of students dropping out from their original universities has not budged from 22%. And that figure is kind of roughly the same today. This is despite some £800 million being paid to universities over the same period to help retain students most likely to withdraw from courses earlier." So clearly at that point, you know, he was making the point. He goes on to highlight that there were at the time proportionally more widening participation students, and that they're more likely to leave. I'm not quite sure whether there's any real research to back that up. He says there's a great disparity on retention numbers between universities, and that there's an absence of reliable, relevant management information, especially data on the reason that people leave. And then he finishes by suggesting that providing additional academic support for students, for example, maths elements where necessary, and access to tutors can provide pastoral and academic support, and that's where the focus should be. So fairly sort of limited kind of analysis, if you like, but pointing out three or four important things. David Eastwood, who was then chief exec of the HEFCE, commented that the report acknowledges that the UK has a higher estimated graduate rate than most OECD countries, and this has been achieved and maintained during a period when HE has opened up both to increased numbers and to a greater diversity of students. So, you know, to counterbalance the first quote. And also Bill Rammell, who was here earlier, he echoed the same kind of point as well when he was Minister for HE. But if over a fifth of students are not transferring to a second year, then there's obviously still plenty of work to be done. And this has also been recognised more recently, along with the recognition of the reality of different retention rates at different institutions, in the offer guidance about access agreements. That was March of this year. And again, to quote them, "An institution with a low proportion of students from underrepresented backgrounds will wish to concentrate mostly on increasing those proportions, while an institution with an already representative student body but relatively high non-completion rates will wish to include measures and targets aimed at improving student retention." So it's clearly something which is still an important message. And I suppose really offer highlight that the important message come down from ministers, that retention needs to be improved, particularly at some institutions and particularly on some programmes. So it's not an across the board thing. Anyway, not much later than the Stay in the Course report, in September 2009, we were asked by Paul Hamlin to work with them on their programme. there was £1 million available for a robust evidence-based analysis and evaluation, as it was quoted. And our job really was to identify and to support the different projects and to disseminate the most effective strategies so that we could try and ensure high continuation and completion rates for universities. 63 proposals were received from a wide range of institutions, and 7 were selected, which involved over 20 institutions. 2 key areas had been identified in the literature, and this also appeared to be in common through the proposals. And they were, 1, the provision of academic support to students, and 2, the social integration of the student, and that was to promote what was called a sense of belonging. So the 7 chosen projects covered a range of issues which actually sets out the territory quite well. And if I'd been allowed to have a PowerPoint, I'd have put those up so you could see them, but it was suggested to me that the PowerPoint wasn't going to be available. So I'll read a quick summary of them out to you. But I do think it sets out the territory around student engagement, enhanced student experience, and particularly with regard to retention, very well. So Northumbria, Bedford and Manchester, they were working around a framework which would enable students to better understand the nature of learning in higher education, again something that was mentioned earlier, and as well as a language for a structured dialogue between tutor and student. They also were looking at a tool for measuring the impact of interventions. So again, mostly what I'll say will pick up things that were said earlier. Aston University was leading a number of other universities looking at different models of peer mentoring and their impacts. Reading and Oxford Brookes were looking at personal development planning, study support and personal tutor system. Sunderland, with Newcastle and Hull, were looking at a focus on student integration, how students integrate into institutions. And they had separate studies into mature students at Hull, engineering students at Newcastle and local students at Sunderland. So again, producing some really fascinating material there. Anglia Ruskin, together with 2 regional colleges, looked at, again, support through personal tutoring and the use of what they're calling non-academic student advisors, which is a role that they've developed. Leicester looked at the analysis of appropriate data. You remember the committee at my first report said that there wasn't much data around. And they also looked at testing out what studios identified as making a difference and what gives a sense of belonging. Nottingham Trent, Bournemouth and Bradford were the 7th project. And they looked at, it was quite interesting, it had me a bit baffled really, but what makes students stay rather than leave? So they're looking from that point of view. And they were talking about doubters, students who were considering leaving. And they looked into doing comparisons against low retention courses and high retention courses. So again, some quite interesting information really about student attitudes. In the fifth, sorry, in the fifth briefing that we put out, we identified a set of sort of commonalities across all the projects. And again, these wouldn't be on the PowerPoint if we had a PowerPoint, so I've just basically printed some off. Thank you. I'm sure my glamorous assistant can get it in. I'll help you, Tom. Hey, you've got glamorous in it. So, as I say, what we did as the project went along, we put out 6 briefings. This is the 5th one. And as it completed its 2nd year, these were the striking commonalities which emerged from each of the project teams. So first of all, and some of them might surprise us, some might not, a significant minority of students think about leaving HE at least once. The quality of the academic experience is crucial. Family and friends are important in encouraging students to stay in HE, and often they do include the informal information, advice and guidance. Again, an obvious one, perhaps student motivation to study a particular programme contributes to persistence. Early engagement, particularly in the academic sphere, is valuable. Institutions need to work with students to develop their knowledge, confidence, identity to become successful HE learners. Promoting student engagement in socially oriented activities is effective at creating social networks, and that contributes to learning. Students need access to a range of services where they can use to meet their requirements. Nurturing a sense of entitlement and belonging is crucial to student retention success. and active student engagement with learning, peers, staff and professional services promotes a sense of belonging and improves retention and success. I mean, it's not exactly counterintuitive, is it? I mean, my background is careers, and probably if I'd been asked, I would have come up with most of those. And it's straightforward and fairly commonsensical, I think, in a way. But we still have the 22% non-continuation figure, which is obviously very high. And I'm sure none of us accept that it's reached a natural level. And we're all obviously trying to bring it down. But clearly, in reality, each student would have a different factor or a combination of factors that was going to be affect non-completion if it did. So it's a sort of complex thing for institutions to respond to. But again, the centrality of student engagement in higher education and a sense of belonging are the two things that kind of come up over and over and over again. And that is something which has come out in the literature. But again, quite a lot of the literature is actually American. That we were looking at, and I'm not sure there's an awful lot of literature in terms of proper research literature in terms of retention in England. There is an institutional role, together with putting in the systems and the processes that are needed to deliver the capacity of students to engage. And again, it's a bit of a faff to give these round. The programme developed a model. And the lucky ones who will first get the blue coloured ones, I'm afraid the others are. But this is a model that was produced to try and visually show the way in which student engagement, student experience, could and should be, could be supported. Up on the wall, but you can see the model. Taking preparation and transition and student capacity development first of all, again, the sorts of practice and the things that were coming out of the projects were really that it's obviously a lot of it's about outreach work, pre-entry advice and guidance, on course and institution careers. All kinds of information, really. And where things seemed to be working well, there was an extended induction rather than the perhaps old-fashioned week's induction or a very short induction. But the main thing about those two areas, really, was that there was an effort to make sure the student actually had an understanding of HE, that they'd made that crossover, that there was a need for a greater independence of thought and greater independent study and research, there was a greater need for self-organisation and for self-regulation, and they really needed to understand the language of HE, which again has been mentioned several times earlier, and to develop a kind of student confidence. So these two areas perhaps represent a need for a crucial shift from applicant to belonging to the institution. Going around the model, the academic experience clearly needs to be positive. They need to identify with their course. It's a great opportunity to identify with their fellow students and with their tutors. There should be proper induction and a supported introduction and development through their academic study. If maths or study support or anything like that is needed, it should be available. Good assessment and feedback was highlighted as being absolutely critical. And again, some element of future planning, sort of looking at postgrad work, employment, but some element of future planning that related to the course and made it more meaningful. In terms of the social experience, it's obviously very, very possible to get strong bonds and experience within course groups, and many of the projects were looking at including some kind of socially integrated experience that related to the actual academic delivery. And clearly, there's the wider student social experience that as it's widely understood, and all the new things around tweeting and social networks and the various electronic ways of meeting together. But again, one of the things that was highlighted is that the needs obviously may be different for different students. So again, it's obvious, but these are the things which the research threw up. They'd be different for a mature student. They would be different for a part-time student. They'd be different to someone who brings other identities or needs to the institution. So as part of the whole carousel, really, of stuff that institutions should be thinking about providing that would improve student engagement and belonging, there's the professional services provision. And again, we had a session towards the end of the last plenary, which talked about that. And again, it's obvious, but the important thing that came out of the research was that it's not only that those services are there, but that the student has an awareness of them, a knowledge of them, and knows how to access them. If they don't, they might as well not be there. So again, there's a whole raft of student services, counselling, careers, personal tutoring, library and learning services, disability services, information, advice and guidance of other sorts, admissions, marketing, chaplains, there's widening participation, equality departments, student unions. Again, I've just been in a session about student unions, and a number of things that do involve students, such as peer mentoring. So again, a whole range of professional service provision there to help and enhance the student experience. And finishing off the model, top left, is organisational management. Universities are obviously often fearsomely complicated places. Strategy and operational activity and direction can come adrift. There's lots of delegation and different delivery. But to ensure student retention and success, more and more it's coming out, there's a clear responsibility on institutions to provide the resources, to provide the systems and the processes, to provide a whole series of ongoing opportunities, really, to enable students to embrace and achieve the sort of student experience and engagement that is represented in that kind of model. So we can pick out and discuss the model a little bit more if you like. I was asked to talk for about 15 minutes, so I'm nearly kind of finished. There's one more handout. The handouts are urgent. The project that we're on, which finishes in July, and there will be a big conference in March at York, which is all for advertising. This is the sixth and last briefing from the programme. So this actually does a number of things. It takes that model on a bit further. That I've put out earlier. Sorry. It pulls together quite a bit of practice and gives lots of examples. But as part of the dissemination of the programme as a whole, Action and Access and the Higher Education Academy didn't want it just to be a programme that related to the seven projects that were part of the programme. So we've increasingly tried to make sure that more and more universities were involved. And there is a retention GISMAIL list, for instance. We had a big... very big conference a couple of years ago in York to start the whole thing off, where we invited other institutions. When you look through this, you'll see that there are all sorts of examples from institutions that are not within the seven projects. So we've really tried to kind of pull it out and make it more of a resource, even as it was developing to other institutions. So this briefing kind of gives a conceptual model which identifies some of the findings and the practice, and they're located within one, the academic sphere. And again, one thing I perhaps haven't mentioned yet is the necessity, which again was mentioned upstairs a couple of times, for staff capacity building. If there isn't work done with the academic staff and staff throughout the institution, then a lot of this falls down. And then the other sphere is the social sphere, and the third sphere is the professional services sphere. So as you look through the briefing, it deals with those three particular spheres, and it pulls out all sorts of things that are going on at the moment across different universities and some colleges in terms of retention type work. But it does stress the primary importance of the academic sphere. I mean, you know, the university is not a social club for young adults. It's got a serious reason for being there and for working with young people and older people. But it's the academic sphere which holds actually quite a lot of opportunities, if you look through the project work, for engaging and improving student experience and seeing retention and success. And I suppose the briefing again and the some of the information from the projects emphasises the need to engage with students across the student life cycle. I think a lot of what we perhaps heard upstairs was about attracting students to university, certainly in terms of all the information and stuff. But you know, once you've attracted the students, there's lots of student engagement and retention type work that can go on. So, I mean, final point I would make really is that, again, the briefing reiterates the institutional responsibilities. That the institution, as an inclusive organisation, as a holistic, and especially at senior but also operational levels, needs to manage and promote the sorts of things that the project's beginning to find. The Paul Hamlin work will demonstrate the critical importance of successful student engagement to retention, and it will give lots of specific interventions that have actually been proved, and because we've done it over 3 years, will be shown to improve rates. And so, again, that's it. If you look at the last page, or the last but one page, you can see on there that there's bottom of page 18, there's various websites you can go on to if you want to kind of find out more and find out more information on it. Our Action and Access website has got a lot of the information. All the briefings are there if you wanted to look back at the other briefings. There is, if you look at the end of the list of calendar events, obviously most of them are out of date now, but if you look at the last of that, the event here is but it perhaps ought to have said that on the 28th and 29th of March at York University, there's a final project, 2-day conference on the retention project, which again is not just about the projects, but it's a wider opportunity for people to get involved in a discussion on retention. If you want to get involved in the retention Gismail, and again there's a community of about 400 people I think on that, and things are coming out from the programme, so it's quite lively at the moment at least. And that's at, I think it's in the thing somewhere in the book, but it's at student-retention-and-success@gismail. student-retention-and-success@gismail.uk. So again, if you're interested and want to find out more about all of that. That's about it. Action Access is giving a conference summit on the 28th of November called Access to Higher Education here in London, and we've got three of the projects that are actually giving some of the workshops there. So again, if you're interested, there's information on the Action Access website, but there's an opportunity again to find out more about it. So that was a quick whistle-stop tour through the project. I've tried to bring out some of the main findings and some of the kind of interesting areas that have been thrown up. I'm interested in any comments anybody's got about the admittedly it's just been thrown at you, but any comments you've got or thoughts about the kind of programme as I've revealed it. And if anybody wants to know more afterwards, please do talk to me or contact us or access the website. But otherwise, I know it's now nearly whatever time it nearly is, but if we want to have a discussion, we can for a quarter an hour before we get thrown out. If people have had enough, then it's been a long, long day. I don't know. So any particular comments?
Well, I'll raise one, because I think it's fascinating. I just have a quick thumb through of the projects and activities that you described, and I think there's some really good and interesting strategies and ideas and things that can be taken forward there. But I kind of wonder to what extent all those new things you've done are kind of the cream of the cake rather than the fundamentals of what's needed. Because, of course, if you think about where we get our retention statistics from, if we've got 20%+, 22% of whatever it is nationally who we don't manage to retain, there are certainly some who are very able students and the circumstances have caused them to drop out for some reason. But probably there's more correlation with the weaker students and the ones who have got semi-chaotic lives and all this kind of stuff. And I noticed that at the end, your list of stuff here actually mentions engagement appears in almost every one of these things, and including monitoring student engagement. And I just wonder whether, if we do all the cream stuff, are we actually making things better for the students who we retain anyway, or are we really getting to the students who are going to make the difference to the statistics? Sorry, Andy Downton, De Montfort University.
Thank you. I think if you do read at least three of the projects are much more focused on the nitty gritty, if you like. I suppose, in a sense, the briefing's trying to pull out some of the kind of top line stuff, really. But certainly, in terms of some of the projects, no, it's looking very much. I mean, the one with Sunderland, the one that's where Hull's looking at mature students, and they've really got into quite some depth with four or five different groups across the university. The Newcastle's looking at engineering students as a kind of bunch, and a lot of those are part-time, and a lot of those have got various other kind of draws on their time. And another one, Sunderland, is actually looking at the different ways in which local students may or may not be engaging. So I think there is within the projects, I mean, perhaps we need to bring that out better in terms of the final report will come out, I think, in sort of March or April. And perhaps we need to bring that out more.
Yes. Hi, Andy Gibson of Mayor School Electrical Engineering at Manchester University. We had a huge retention problem. 40% of our home students we were losing a few years ago. We got that down to 19% this year. What we noticed was that the people people that continued, it was related to attendance. So those that didn't attend basically failed the first year and had to leave the course. So what we did was we put monitoring into the lecture, so it's a swipe card system. We found that our attendance has really improved, and our figures have improved from 40% to 19%. But another thing, it's more complex sometimes in different courses, different institutions. What we found is that we don't really adjust our marks in the first year, so if it's a pure average, it's moved to about 40% or just above. There's a range. It goes to the bottom of the range. But other courses, other schools, other courses find if they've got an average down at 20-30%, they adjust it up to 60%. And that's going that's an impact on retention just by doing that. So it's not consistent.
No.
So it may look like some schools are doing a bad job, but actually they're. And in the end, all our students in third year actually get a degree, whereas in other places there's failures. There's no degrees given.
Yeah.
So it's a bit more complicated.
It's really easy to be just black and white about it, and the whole continuation rates and non-completion rates they need disentangling, really. Yeah, I agree.
Has anything been done to tie together any of the work, this actual access, you've got a wealth of material now, with anything like your back on course wealth of information about when they're contacting people who've left? Because I know that one of the things that they were finding, a lot of it was about lack of communication, so the student didn't really even know that they were not completing until they were in the position of not completing. Are there any kind of early warning signs that have come out through these things, and are there any links to the other national research that's going on?
We haven't linked it into anything formally, but as I say, we have tried to make sure. I think that they will be inviting other retention type kind of projects and programs to the March conference, but we haven't done anything formally with that, and that it would be interesting to kind of to pull more of it together.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's perhaps a task for us next year once we've got through the final report for this one. Thanks.
They use the Aspire smart card system that targets spending in particular areas that they say it can be spent in, but you also get more released the more that you progress, so to speak, and we're actually doing some work looking at tying that through to retention, but also tying that through to the value and impact of actually delivering a bursary in that way. The assumption, and certainly the early indications, are that it does help.
Yes.
I mean, there's lots and lots of work going on. As I say, We did this because the money was made available to do it and to do it within seven projects, but we've tried our best to make sure that we try and pull some of the other work in as well. But it's across all institutions, and there's all sorts of different things going on.
And I think those examples do kind of highlight that there's a sort of basic thing. And it always struck me as bizarre that we kind of by default have a higher education system which differs from every other part of the education and work life cycle in not formally structuring attendance, for example. Mm. You know, we kind of have this idea that that students should be independent learners, so we kind of let them off the leash completely at exactly the point where they're not very experienced about how to do it. You know, the army goes to the other extreme, but I don't think we want to go down that line exactly. But you know, it might be that we're just doing a bit too much in terms of letting them off the leash. And that's the simplest. And, I mean, I would like, for example, we're just trialing cards for attendance checking ourselves, actually, with a view to possibly rolling them out if we can see that it will have an impact on retention. And your example certainly shows that it does.
Yeah, it's worked. I used to work in further education too as a student services, and it was one of the places I worked did that, and it worked really, really well.
Mm.
Yes, sorry.
Just wait, come on, thanks. My name's Caroline. I'm the president of the University of Salford Students Union, so I come at a slightly different angle. As far as I'm aware, there's been a lot of research into the issue of retention over a number of years. I suppose I'm kind of sort of putting it out there to see why has there been all this research and yet the retention, national retention, is still is 20%. You know, why has there been years of work done and nothing has actually changed for the students? And it's also maybe my slightly less experienced view. It is about that sense of belonging. You said it's not difficult, isn't difficult. Mm. Some of this is common sense. So I kind of think, why has there been so much research for so many years? When I think it is sort of common sense, but it's about students feeling that they are actually a person, that you know, the institution and lecturers and administrative staff and anyone they come into contact recognises that they are an individual who has come from a variety of backgrounds, have lots of different things going on. And they're not just simply a born fantasy or a number. You know, they actually have a life, a story to tell. But just slightly just following on from the attendance, I completely accept that attendance you know, has a massive correlation to success and achievement. And as an undergraduate, I went to absolutely everything I could, mainly because I didn't want to do so much outside of that. But and I completely went to everything. However, I just think that it's really dangerous to turn it into it just being about attendance. It does have to be about participation, and the emphasis has to be still on the academic and the institution to make their programmes engaging and to make them exciting. The students actually want to go to them, not just because they're going to be able to stick because they've not turned up for the lecture, but because they actually want to be there, because they actually want to be part of their learning experience. And obviously that comes from the student as well. I'm not trying to advocate responsibility at all. But attendance for me is not the answer, and it's a crude way of just trying to make sure people are engaging this lovely word that we like to use.
Mm. Mm. Fair point, I think. But I think, again, you know, from the work we've been doing, it is that sense of belonging, and it is that preparatory work in the early stages of getting students to get a better understanding of what HE is asking of them, and then delivering to and giving them, and just helping them to kind of get a sense of belonging, to become partners, as they were saying upstairs, in the process.
I think you did actually make the point at the beginning, but I'd also, in response to your comment, that it's easy to kind of appear too defensive about this. I mean, we have actually improved things. We've improved things because we've got the same retention rate, but with a much more diverse set of students coming in. Because as we've increased the proportion, you know, you can't get more of the top 10%. You get the next 20% down, whatever it is. So that has been a factor. And if we'd done nothing, we probably would have got less retention. And then the second point, of course, is that, you know, politicians are always kind of giving us a hard time about this, but we actually have the most efficient system in the world, you know, bar none, in terms of, you know, nobody else gets anywhere near our retention rates in other countries. You go to quite a lot of the European countries, you know, their retention rates are less than 50%.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, they have open access, of course.
That's why I was kind of tongue-in-cheek wondering whether we've got a natural level even for us at 22%.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, somewhere or other, there is a limit to what we can do, and I don't think we should be defensive about making the point that we're actually doing extremely well already.
Yeah. And as an ex-careers advisor, you know, if someone made a choice to leave a course, then they may have a very sensible choice to do that. It may be the best thing for them to do. It's not necessarily a kind of negative outcome, if you like. So, yeah. Any other comments or thoughts? I mean, that's really helpful, thank you, in terms of I can feed that back into the team that's organising things. And I hope you found it interesting. And as I say, if you want to follow any of it up, if you use the last briefing I've given you, you can do that with the various links. And on the back, I forgot to say, well, these are the people who are actually running the projects. So, and with contact details. So if you're particularly interested, do please follow it up. But thank you very much for attending the second level of Dante's Inferno shift. And I'm sorry if I flagged a little bit, but I've been on the girl since half past six or something like that. So. But thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.